Corey, you live on the border. What do you see? What's happening?
I constantly see these white buses coming down, and the buses are full of illegal immigrants that are coming here claiming asylum, not through the port of entry. They're coming through the fence, cutting the fence, around the fence, over the fence. So I went out there one day, and there was like 200 people standing there, and they had tents, there were fires going. I was blown away.
Did you talk to these people?
I have found documents giving them exact instructions. So that's where things kind of turned for me on. This is a very regimented, professional operation. Who's doing it?
My guest today is Corey Goturo. He's a resident at the border in San Diego. Over the last year, we've been covering the situation at the border around San Diego area. There's been a lot of border crossings. Corey has been documenting what's happening around the border, and he's here to tell us his story.
I talked to a Venezuelan gentleman, and I said, why are you coming across? And he explained to me that in Venezuela, on their own media and radio, they're talking about how easy it is to come to the United States right now. This isn't a political issue for me. This is a, something's not right.
I'm Siamak Gorami. Welcome to California Insider. Corey, it's great to have you on. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Corey, you live on the border, and you're in a very unique position to see what's happening in the southern border, especially in Southern California. You're close to San Diego. You've been looking at what's happening in your own backyard, and you're like a few miles away from the border, right?
About 6 miles from the actual fence, yes. So I can see it from my backyard.
And so what do you see?
Driving down the road, I constantly see these white buses coming down every time I leave in the morning and when I come home. And the buses are full of illegal immigrants that are coming here claiming asylum, and not through the port of entry, mind you. They're coming through the fence, cutting the fence, around the fence, over the fence. And that's a 40-foot tall fence. I worked in healthcare for a few years, and I've seen what can happen when you fall down that fence. It's not good. So we have this open door policy right now that is kind of telling these people, hey, it's okay to come across and claim asylum, but it's not safe. It's not safe for them at all.
How did you figure out there is an open door policy?
Approximately maybe 9-10 months ago, there's a neighborhood page on Facebook, and someone wrote on there, there's a large group of Asian men walking down the freeway. This would be the 8 East or the 8 West.
It's in, kind of in the middle of nowhere, right? Kind of like, yeah.
So there's nothing there. Saw that, and I'm like, what? It's the middle of nowhere. So a large group of Asian men in the middle of nowhere in eastern San Diego. It's very confusing when you read that. So I remember I looked at my wife. Am I reading this correctly? First of all, large group of Asian men out here and then walking down the freeway. So hopped in my truck, drove down there. It was probably 3 miles away at the time. And that's what piqued my interest in this whole thing. That's what started everything for me. It ended up being a large group of Chinese males. This term's thrown around a lot, military-age males. And I don't think people understand what that means anymore because it's used so much. They were about 18 to 35 years old. No women in this group at all. No children. All men. At the time, it was just a shock just to see that.
And did you talk to them? Did you do any?
No, I didn't know what to do. I was like, who do you call? Because I didn't know they had come across the border at that point. I was just very confused like everyone else.
So you drove by.
I drove by and I'm like, okay, she's right. There's a large group of Asian men walking down the freeway. Then later I found out that they crossed illegally and they were coming here for asylum.
How did you figure out these guys have crossed the border?
So I actually have a firearm store in El Cajon, and I have a lot of Border Patrol friends that come in and purchase from me. And just it's kind of like a barbershop mentality at my store. People come in and they talk, and I hear everything in there. So I started listening to this stuff and asking questions. Who are these people? What are they doing? And they, at the time, they were confused as well. But they told me, hey, they crossed the border and they're here to claim asylum. This was at the very beginning out by me when this started. And then they would come in and I keep talking, and keep getting a little bit of information. And so I drove out to one of these areas. It's off of Tierra del Sol Road in Boulevard, and they call it 177. It's a 177 tower. So I went out there one day. I hadn't been out there since high school. The reason I'm very familiar with this area is because in high school we used to go out there with our Jeeps and have fun. So I go out there, and there was like 200 people standing there, and they had tents. There were fires going. Like, I was blown away. It was like a sophisticated homeless encampment, but everybody had cell phones. Who knows who they were calling? They were wearing nicer clothes than I've ever purchased for myself. Their shoes look like they had just been dropped right at the fence and maybe walked a few hundred yards. So now I'm really confused at this point. What's going on? These aren't the illegal immigrants that I had seen growing up that had a very tough time walking through. They're coming here to better their families, send money back to Mexico, Central, South America. These are not the people that I grew up seeing. And I use the example, the people in front of Home Depot, because most people know what that means when I say that. My gun store is actually right next to Home Depot. So I've watched this shift happen. People have come in, and most recently African countries and Haiti, and they've pushed out the people that we're used to seeing at Home Depot. And now they're standing out there, and they're all military-aged men. It's not the 40, 50, 60-year-old Mexican guys that we used to see 5-10 years ago standing in front of Home Depot trying to get a job. So it's changed drastically.
And so when you saw this encampment, did you talk to these people? What did you do?
At first, I was, like I said, I was blown away. I didn't really know what to do. And then, well, hey, let me talk to them, see what's going on. So I started to talk to them. At that one location, the cell service is very spotty. So I downloaded a translator app, but I started talking to them. And then I started seeing different nationalities, Turkish people, a lot of Turkish people at that time. It was mainly Turkish and Chinese. What I would see, there were usually a handful or one or two males that were in charge of the whole group. They had kind of promoted themselves to being in charge. They were always very nice. They usually spoke English, so they could talk to Border Patrol and tell them what was going on. So when I would go down there, these guys would come up and just talk to me immediately after I'd been down there a few times. Sometimes they were down there for 2-3 days or nights in these tents. They would build these fires. One of the main reasons that I started getting frustrated was because of the fires. You obviously know the fire issue that we have here in Southern California. I'm right down the road from this. They're building fires with the protected manzanita plant that if you or I cut down, there's a problem. But they're ripping this stuff out of the ground and building these fires. Manzanita burns really hot, so it's a great fire if you need to stay warm. So they're ripping it out of the ground, ruining the environment. I've never seen an environmentalist down there, ever. And these fires get 10, 15 feet tall. They're huge, huge bonfires that, again, if you or I went out there and did that, we'd go home with a ticket. So I contacted Cal Fire. Said, well, I kind of played dumb, I'll be honest. I said, hey, I want to have a fire at my house. I want to burn some stuff. What do I need to do? You need to get a permit. Cool. I had heard from the Border Patrol previously that warming fires are legal. So I said, oh, okay, what if I want to have a little bonfire with my girls at my house? What do I need to do? Well, it needs to be enclosed, and if an ember takes off and catches something on fire, you're going to be liable. I said, no problem. What are we doing about the illegal fires a couple miles from my house that are going to burn massively during fire season? Oh, well, those are warming fires, so those are legal.
So they knew about these fires?
Yeah. I said, okay, well, all my fires at my house are warming fires. Well, you can't do that because we could trace it back to you. We can't trace it back to whoever started it out there. It's the rules for thee, not for me, right? So that was very frustrating because no one is monitoring what may happen out there.
You know, have you seen any incidents happen with these fires?
They get out of control, and there's brush everywhere out there. It's a prime place for a very bad fire to start. So I started carrying a fire extinguisher in my truck, which for some of this stuff is not going to do anything. So I drive down there one day just to check things out and see what was new. And I'm probably a mile away, and I see smoke. So I speed up, get down there. There's one Border Patrol agent with water bottles trying to put this fire out. Now, this fire was in between two big rocks, and the wind was just blowing through there. And it was going good. So I pulled up. I saw him struggling. Some of the illegals were there trying to help him put out the fire. They were Turkish guys. They're trying to help him put out the fire, but they were using cardboard and trying to slap the fire out with the cardboard, which creates more wind. So I'm yelling at him, like, stop. It was a disaster because they didn't know what I was saying. And the Border Patrol guy literally had just a case of water bottles that he was going to give them. And he's just trying to dump them on the fire. It was already beyond that point. Years ago, I worked as a volunteer firefighter at the Boulevard Station right there. Very short stint before I joined the Army. I still had my jacket and I had it in the truck. My turnout coat. So I grabbed it, and now I'm trying to smuggle the fire with that, and I burnt my hand a little bit, and these guys are still making the fire. One of them took a piece of the manzanita that was on fire and then threw it over in the bush. I'm like, you're not helping anything here. You're creating more fires. So another Border Patrol vehicle comes up, and there was a bunch of trainees in there. It was a recipe for disaster. The people that were there trying to help. And so they came, and they're just kicking dirt on it. And my father was with me at the time. So he's trying to help. So, and then I'm going to back my truck up so it doesn't get burnt. Well, they parked right behind me, so I couldn't move. So I just got in their vehicle and moved it. And then I moved my truck back. Finally, we got this thing under control. The fire department showed up afterwards, and it would have been way too late for everything because of the wind and the conditions that day. It was horrible.
Yeah, and in San Diego, with the winds we have and the fire can take off. And
yeah.
Wow. So there is these fires happening, isn't?
So right now, because it's cold out, it's not necessarily a problem.
But during the fire season, it could be a problem.
In a few weeks here, it's going to be bad again. And now that they have moved closer to civilization where they're coming through, if they build these fires there, because it'll still get cold at night, cold enough to need a fire, especially with the clothes that they're wearing. So they're going to be very close to civilization and building these fires. But then if you go back to what Cal Fire said, which is it is legal to have a warming fire. Well, if we're allowing them, the administration's allowing them to come across, are you going to tell them they can't have a fire to stay warm? Because now we have to use other resources for hypothermia. So they're going to be calling 911. There's one ambulance up there. So if something happens to me or my family, and that ambulance is gone because we didn't allow them to have a fire or we allowed them to come here in the first place, they're taking resources away from our community. It just doesn't make sense.
Folks, you've probably been hearing me talk about VyRefi for a while now. VyRefi has been getting a ton of phone calls from you, and I thank you for supporting an investment that actually helps people. A lot of people are talking about this investment, and I'd like to review the basics with you. First off, yes, it's true. You can earn up to 10.25% fixed rate of return that's not correlated to the stock market or to the Fed. You can turn your income on or off, compounded, whatever you choose, and there are absolutely no fees. There are no restrictions on your principal if you ever need your money back, and you'll get your monthly statement with no surprises. If you are not sure if you can trust this economy, this secure collateralized portfolio may be a very good option for you. Just go to investyrefi.com. That's invest, the letter Y, then refi.com. Folks, I take my endorsements very seriously. If you're looking for a solid investment that helps people, contact my friends at VyRefi, and then tell them Siamak Karami sent you. Now let's go back to the interview. And do they come and go? What did you see? Did you see different groups of people? Every 2 to 3 days, there would be new groups of people? Or
yes, at that time, it was mainly Chinese, Turkish sprinkled throughout, but they would get, so the Border Patrol would come out in vans or buses. Sometimes they would search them, sometimes they don't. They get in the vans and then they process them down right down the road. So that a new group would come in.
The interactions you had with them, how was it? Did you feel any danger or was it?
So yes and no. A lot of times the guys that would come up and just talk to me freely, they were very nice. Now remember, they're claiming asylum. So you can't be crazy or outspoken, or you have to toe the line, or you're not going to get an asylum claim. So they're all very nice, but who knows what happens afterwards. Some of them would have groups of people picking up trash. It was very regimented. Some of them would be looking after the children. Some of them would go up to the Border Patrol and say, hey, this lady has diabetes. She's going to need some help. So a lot of times they would put the women and children first, and the Border Patrol does that anyway. But they were the spokespeople for the group. So it was very regimented. When I say that, very few times would a group come across, a big group, and then another group would come across. It wasn't like that at all. A group would come across, they'd get settled, and then the vans or buses would pick them up, so most of them would leave. Then the next group would come across. So the people in the South that are running this seem to know that if they overwhelm the Border Patrol, that might get it shut down.
So you think this is pretty organized?
Very.
The way it comes and the people come and they get picked up. We actually had Jim Desmond on the show about the drop-off locations, because we know that they're getting dropped off in San Diego and other places.
They're getting dropped off. The airport is another one. There's hotels throughout the county that they're being dropped off at. And then Jim and Bill, Jim Desmond and Bill Wells have spoken about the trolley stops that they can be dropped off at.
Now, did you notice some odd things when you have been having these encounters?
I don't even know where to begin with that. There's so many odd things. I was out there one day. This has actually happened multiple times, but this guy kind of went a little overboard. I've been documenting this stuff myself just to see what's happening, make sure my family's safe, my neighbors are safe, my community's safe.
And you have two daughters, right?
I have two daughters, yes. And three German shepherds, so, yeah. So I'm out there, and a Syrian gentleman, very skinny, shorter, on the shorter side, comes up to me and goes, arrest me. No, what? No. And it took a minute to process that. They're coming across and they want to get arrested immediately. This guy had about another mile walk. This was on Otay Mountain. He had about another mile walk, and he had probably walked a mile at that point. It was a little warm. It was in the 70s, so it was a good hiking day if you were hiking. And he wanted to get captured immediately so he didn't have to do the rest of the walk. And I can't arrest anybody.
So he thought you were Border Patrol?
Yeah. So he said, you got to keep going that way. There's nothing I could do. And the Border Patrol will wait for them in a certain area. They seem to know pretty well where they're going, even at night. They've been coached very well. That's not just me speculating. I have found documents giving them exact instructions on where to go in their language.
There's maps, and there's like, okay, this is what you do. You go get arrested by the Border Patrol.
In one of these documents, it says it's something along the lines of, don't talk to the Border Patrol. They can be manipulative. So similar to what we have here in America that we've been told, when obviously my gun store is, we're very military law enforcement friendly. We're a law enforcement dealer. That being said, you don't talk to a cop when they pull you over or they come to your house without a lawyer. Now they're kind of being told the same thing. Don't talk to anybody to incriminate yourself. But who's coaching them? So that's where things kind of turned for me on, this is a very regimented, professional operation. Who's doing it? So then I started looking, and the supervisors here in San Diego County awarded the NGOs, non-government organizations, so charities, $6 million to help with this issue. A lot of these charities, they were working on the homeless crisis, which is a crisis here.
there's about 10,000 people in San Diego that are homeless. That a lot of them are living in the streets.
I think that's just one block now. There's so many people there that need help. And as a veteran myself, there's so many veterans that need help. So it's frustrating to see us give money to people that are using this system that's broken right now to come across when we have people here that need help badly. Some of these people don't want help, and you can't fix everybody, right? But I have a feeling that that $6 million could have been used a lot better. Now, what we've seen is these charities that were working on the homeless crisis shift to the immigration crisis, kind of right when the money started coming in. So then again, you look at it like, that seems weird. Now all the homeless people are out of there and all the illegal immigrants are going in. And I keep using the term illegal immigrants. When we turn the TV on, they're migrants. Or what's the other one? Undocumented travelers. I don't understand why we can't use the actual terms anymore. They may have been seeking asylum until they crossed the border illegally. We're a nation of laws. I own a gun store. I have thousands of laws I have to follow. It's very frustrating. I don't agree with all of them. But still have to follow them, or I'll be out of business very quickly. So when you claim asylum, you're supposed to go through a port of entry. Well, climbing over the fence is not a port of entry, or cutting the fence. That costs you and I money to fix the fence. And you can't fix it back to what it was, because that fence that comes down has concrete in it. So when they cut it, they cut through the concrete, and then when they fix it, they just put a little collar on it. But the concrete's already cut. So I've watched this happen in person. The collar is now just a easy spot for them to see that the concrete's already been cut. So now they just have to cut the collar, which is easy. So now they're like a 10-mile stretch out by where I live, where there's only a handful of border agents, and there's no way they can monitor the whole thing. So they'll just cut that collar, and then 100 people will come through. Now we have a fence cut again. Now we have to take resources to fix the fence. It's just cat and mouse.
Another one is getting cut somewhere else.
Yeah.
Is it a few spots that they're cutting, or is it rotating all the time?
It seems to be rotating all the time, but you can, when you drive down the border road, you can see the collars on the fence. So you know, they're probably going to cut that again, because they already went through the concrete, the hard part. There's concrete with two pieces of rebar down the middle of it.
Do you know who's cutting them? How do they do that?
I don't know who's cutting it. I mean, I can speculate who's cutting it. I think we all can. But they use a like a diamond blade. It does take some time, and it's very loud. But the stretch is so big, and we have so few border agents, it's hard for them to get there before it's cut.
So something that may not make sense to a lot of us, if somebody goes to the, San Ysidro, and let's say they want to come to this country, they're not going to get in unless they go through the process.
Correct.
And if they're going to try to do it legally, it's probably very hard to do that, to go through the process. I've been through that. Some other friends have been through that. It's not easy.
No.
But then if somebody breaks the fence and walks in from that area, they can come in and just make it from what you're seeing.
That's one of the crazy parts about this. Why are we incentivizing people to do things the wrong way? Now, like you said, the process that we have now, going through the port of entry, it's not great. It takes a very long time. You're not guaranteed anything. But that's what we have. That's what we have to use. Should we fix that process? Should we make it more streamlined to help people that are actually claiming asylum for real reasons? Absolutely. We're a nation that does help people. We always have. We should help people that need help. But don't exploit our system and come the wrong way. Now, I've talked to some people. I talked to a Venezuelan gentleman, and I said, why now? Why are you coming across? And we were using the translator app. He spoke pretty good English, but it was easier to use the translation. He explained to me that in Venezuela, on their own media and radio, they're talking about how easy it is to come to the United States right now, which is weird to me. Why would they want their citizens to leave. That's confusing. I don't understand that. But then the current administration is giving these people a false sense of hope and security. So while we may not like all of the illegal immigration coming through, it is a humanitarian crisis. These people are coming across with nothing. And they think they cross the border and, you know, arrest me, and then it's just going to be greener pastures. I've kept in contact with this gentleman. He's in Ohio now. And he explained to me that he cannot find a job. And if he can't find a job soon, he's going to have to go back to Venezuela. Wow. So what are we doing? So what happens when you can't find a job? And then how's he going to get a ticket back? He can't. So what do you turn to when you can't find a job? Crime. That's the only thing that's left. People won't hire him. When he was here, he told me he was going to try and get a job at a restaurant or something like that in Ohio, which is another interesting, why would you go to Ohio? Why would you go anywhere? But in the middle of the country, as a foreigner, doesn't seem like a good idea to me. And he's finding that out himself. So we need to stop telling these people that it's okay to come here and it's going to be great when you get here, because it's not. It's not fair to them. They think they're coming here for something better, and they get here and go, well, that's a slap in the face.
And you mentioned they're coming, the clothes they're wearing. Can you tell us what, do they have much with them?
No. Most of them do not. Now, some of them will have, it's interesting because it's almost like you could take these people, put them in the airport, and it would look like they were going on a trip. So some of them will have like a pull behind bag, and you'll see it in the dirt roads, the lines from the wheels of the bags. If you or I were going to do this, we'd probably get some, you know, long pants, nice boots, maybe a long shirt. I would definitely get sunscreen, jacket,
and backpack,
you know, yeah, with a camelback, with water and stuff. They don't have any of that stuff. It's like they were, hey, we're going to go to America, pack your Louis Vuitton bag, let's go. They're not prepared for this at all. And it's a harsh reality when they get here, like we talked about, especially if they have to stay a couple nights. They're not prepared for it. You can see the people who are prepared and the people that are not. So the people that are not will be, there'll be 20 of them around a fire. And then there'll be one guy over here with his own little fire doing his own thing. Those are the people that worry me. That guy knows what he's doing. These people don't.
What else have you seen at the border, Corey?
One of the big things that led to a lot more questions that I've been finding out there are ID cards. Now I could pick them out from 50 feet away. But I would see them, and I'd pick them up, and most of them were Chinese people. And they're actually Mexican ID cards. They'll say visitor, so a visitor, or humanitarian on the card. So then I looked into it a little bit. That kind of allows them, let's call it, free travel throughout Mexico without, if they get contacted by law enforcement in Mexico, they can show their card and then they're there legally. So it keeps them out of trouble. Then as I'm finding these cards, I look around, there's a passport, which is very unusual to us because if we travel with a passport, you could lose your phone, you could lose your head, but do not lose your passport, right? I probably have 50 of them, passports, different from different countries.
So they drop off the passport to just...
So a lot of these, I would say it's 50-50 mix. They'll just be tossed on the ground. Some of them will be burnt, ripped up, but if you rip it up in the same spot, it's not that hard to put it back together. So that was concerning to me. Why are they getting rid of this stuff, their identity? Why are they getting rid of their identity when they come to the U.S.? Then, as I'm looking at this stuff, you know, I find cell phones ripped in half or smashed, debit cards, credit cards. I found a credit card it was multiple credit cards, and then the passport and ID, all in the same area. It's called Singpreet Dairy Farm. So I Googled it. They have a Dun & Bradstreet number.
Wow.
So they're doing business with the U.S. government, but then coming here illegally, or funding, better yet, funding someone to come here illegally with their credit cards. None of this is making sense. So I'm finding all this stuff. And again, you don't lose your passport. You definitely don't lose your credit cards. So then I'm wondering, why are they getting rid of this stuff? Well, when they come across and you don't have any information on who you are, now you're John Smith. Start your new life. So if you don't have, if you're not in Interpol or any of the other fingerprint systems that they have throughout the world, you're just a new person. You get to start your new life, which is very scary because we have no idea who you are. Now, if you or I wanted to go to Canada and become a Canadian citizen, it's not that easy. You don't just show up there and go, hey, I'm American, coming to Canada, what do I pay? No, you have to have a reason. Are you a doctor or an engineer? They want the best people coming to their country. Why aren't we doing that?
So from what you've gathered, it looks like the people are going to Mexico and then they're getting some sort of identity. So they're allowed to come to Mexico, but it's with the intention of coming to U.S. Mm-hmm. because they're getting the visitor ID.
So once I started collecting those, and I have a friend who works in a position where he knows IDs very well. It's a government position. And he came over, took a look at him. He goes, that one's fake. That one's fake. That one's fake. How do you know that? So when you take your passport picture, there's no shadows. It's the same screen in the background, usually same color. It's always the same. Your passport picture looks very similar to my passport picture. These pictures, it'll be like a dark blue background. And then you look at the others, that does not match. So probably about 70% of these IDs that I found are fakes. And they're all the ones that are fakes are all Chinese. So they're probably getting these IDs before they even get to Mexico. And obviously that's speculation, but when he tells me what to look for, it's night and day between the fake and the real one. Yeah. So that's goes to more questions. Why are they making fake ones? Why aren't they just getting the real ones? Is everything being set up before they even come to Mexico? Are they getting this stuff before they get to Mexico? And I don't know. I don't know the answer to that.
Why are so many people leaving California? It wasn't long ago, people from everywhere wanted to move to the Golden State to enjoy a better life. Sadly, the standard of living has been dropping in the past decade. Are you like me and wonder why this is happening? I'm Siamak Karami, host of California Insider. In our film, Leaving California, The Untold Story, I take you an intimate journey of love, loss, tragedy, and hope as residents face the prospect of leaving their beloved state. Everyday people like you tell their stories about why they have to move out of the state even though they don't want to. Experts and policymakers also give insights about what's happening behind the scenes. Together, we get to the root cause of this exodus. Go to leavingcalifornia.com to view the first 15 minutes of the film for free. By watching Leaving California, you can be part of the solution. Again, go to leavingcalifornia.com. And what else have you seen that might be odd to you in this?
One of the big things that people aren't hitting on enough, in my opinion, is the human and child trafficking side of this. We've seen some horrible things out there. This is probably the worst. And let me back up because this takes massive coordination between the North and the South. Now, who is the North and who is the South?
In the south of the border, right? Some people, they have a plan. They bring the people. They cut the fence. Yep. They bring them in. And then the nonprofits are coming, picking them up.
So that's the interesting part. So if you or I were to pick someone up right now and drive them down the hill, it's human trafficking. But for some reason, our government and the nonprofit organizations can do that under some veil of secrecy, because they're trying to be very secret about what they're doing, especially the locations they're bringing these people. So when I started seeing, it shifted from a lot of Chinese men, Turkish men, to then I started seeing families what I thought were families. You know, I went about this in my mind that these people were trying to come here for a better life. You know, I give everybody the benefit of the doubt until I shouldn't. And then I started seeing more and more kids. So then I'm looking into it just with my own eyes, looking at it. I'm like, that kid doesn't look like the mom or dad, which can happen. Then you look at them again, and the mother and father are both very dark skin, and the kid is my complexion. That's interesting. Maybe that could happen. But then you start seeing more, and then the opposite. And so then I started doing some research. In, I think it was May 2021, the administration stopped doing DNA tests on these children. And when I say that to people get, why would we do DNA tests on these kids? Why would we spend money on that?
Because child trafficking is a big deal, and we were very serious about it.
We were.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened. So those DNA tests would show the kids and whoever the adult was that were with them at the time, if they were related. Now, I don't know if it said, yes, that's the father or the mother, but it would show some sort of relation. What these DNA tests showed at the time was 30% of these children were not related to the people that they were with.
Wow.
And then we stopped that program. So I read this, so then I started looking closer. If it was 30% when we were monitoring it, what is it now? We have no idea. So then some friends, I went with, followed one of these buses down to the Ramada Inn in Mission Valley.
Where the hotels that they're staying, right?
Oh yeah, that is making a killing off of this crisis. They're making a ton of money because they rent that thing out to them every day or monthly. So unaccompanied minors are supposed to go to this facility. There's a couple other facilities. When we went there and looked at it, there's males in the same room with children. And you could literally drive there and just go look. You don't even have to go in. You can see through the window. What is going on here? Is our government, it just sounds insane to say this out loud, right? Is our government facilitating human trafficking at this point? So then I talked to some of the bus drivers, and it's everything that you see with your own eyes. If you ask questions about it, it's very secretive. Nobody wants to tell you anything.
What about the Border Patrol agents that you're talking to at your store? What do they think about this?
I spoke with one of the brass, and it was when I was going out there, and I just wanted to give him a heads up on something. And he said verbatim, "We love what you're doing. I bet 98% of us agree with what you're doing. Keep doing it." Meaning, I'm just showing what's going on. I'm not sensationalizing anything. This isn't a political issue for me. This is something's not right. What are we doing? So according to him, 98% of them agree with what I'm showing and what I'm saying. And I could tell you that just from the people in the store. But if I just go off the people in the store who probably have the same values as me because they're buying firearms from me, what about the other people that aren't gun people? So I've always wondered that until I talked to him and he kind of explained what they're thinking as well. And I get it. It's frustrating to say they're just following orders, because there were a lot of times in history where people just followed orders and it didn't go well. But these people do have families and mortgages, and they live in California. It's very difficult to live here. So I see both sides of it, especially being in the military. I can see that they are just following orders. Some of them, most of the ones I'm friends with, have explained that they can still go do their job and stop people at the fence, but once they get here, they can't do anything.
They just have to take them for them.
So they'll try and jump around and stop people. Like if they hear the fence being cut, they'll run down there real quick, and usually people will take off, but they're just going to go somewhere else. So if we were enforcing the current laws the right way, it seems that we don't have enough agents to do that. Now, do we need more agents now when we're not doing what we're supposed to do? Probably not. I'm not for just giving people money for the fun of it, tax money. But I've seen with my own eyes, they need some help out there.
And what do they think of the human trafficking aspect of it? Because they're picking up these people in batches, right? Have you talked to them about that?
I actually talked to a gentleman a few days ago, and he's on the intel side of things. And he explained to me that this operation is so vast and has so many layers to it. There's people in Los Angeles that are coming down in work trucks, you know, with like the cabinets on the side. And I said, oh, are they picking up drugs? What are they doing? Said, no, they're putting people in there and then driving them back. So they think it's horrible as well. But their hands are kind of tied with, now if they find them on the road and they are human trafficking, they can do something about it. But it's so easier for people to cross right now.
And it seems like the numbers are so overwhelming that they don't have the time to figure out
correct
who is genuinely a family and who is not.
And then the morale, that's a huge thing, the morale. So even if they did have the time and the resources right now, it goes back to what you and I discussed earlier, which was if they conduct a years-long investigation and or even a week long, you know, they dedicate their time and resources to an investigation. And then they go through and they find the people that are doing whatever it is and they arrest them and then they get out the next day. What's the point? How does that affect your morale? Does that make you want to do your job? Not at all. So I can see their side of it, which is at this point, I'm here to collect a paycheck and I'm trying not to get shot. It's demoralizing for me to watch it because I see their faces every day. You know, they come in the store, I see them when they're driving. The morale is literally on the floor. These guys did not sign up to protect our country and then just be Uber drivers at this point. And they're very frustrated.
Now, Corey, you are here to tell us what's going on, and you've actually been somebody that's documenting what's happening, because this is your own backyard, essentially. Why are you doing this?
I was thinking about that on the way up. I don't really have a good answer. My grandfather was in the Battle of the Bulge in World War II, and I could just imagine him seeing what's going on right now, and he's probably rolling in his grave. Well, in fact, I know he is. So all of the people that served in law enforcement, including Border Patrol, and then served our country in the military as well. This is a huge slap in the face to everybody that died for our country or that served our country. And that doesn't sit well with me. Now, there's also the side of things where I want my community to be safe. If I have the ability to help maintain safety in my community, I'm going to do it. Do I want to be doing this? No. I have a family and a business. I'm busy. I'm very busy. But the safety and security of my community and what people before us did to make this country is more important to me than anything else.
So you live by the border, you're close by, and people are coming from all over the world and passing by, and you have your family there. And are you scared living by the border?
You would think so. People ask me that a lot, and it seems like they're worried about where I live. And my answer is no. We kind of hit on it earlier. When people come across illegally and claiming asylum, they're on their best behavior. They're very nice, cleaning up trash, and they're very approachable and nice to you because they're claiming asylum. If you're not acting a certain way, you're probably not going to get asylum here. So when they're out by me, they're very nice and respectful. Now, you do have people, the Border Patrol calls them gotaways, who leave these groups and try and get away. But the majority of the people are very nice. And then what happens when they get processed, they go from here, my house is here, they go from here around my house down to the city where you live. So you should be afraid, not me. They bypassed my house completely. They're not staying up there on the mountain up there. They're going into the cities. And then we have no idea where they're going from there. And that's scary to me. Now, it's not just cities in California like we spoke about. Like this one gentleman from Venezuela who's in Ohio. Some of them are getting plane tickets to Georgia, Ohio. A lot of them are going to New York, which is very interesting to me. Seems like they have a welcome mat to go there. And again, it's a slap in the face to the veterans that need help in New York when they're just giving them money and letting them do basically whatever. We saw those kids and the police officer in New York. They're basically doing whatever they want. It's very frustrating to watch.
Now, do you have a message for Californians and people from the rest of the country that are watching this?
The media is not doing a great job on showing what's actually going on. They talk about a lot of the drugs coming through, fentanyl, which is horrible. I think we can all agree on that. But we're missing the whole other side of things, which is the human and child trafficking. It's a huge industry, billion-dollar industry here in the United States. These kids are going, they're taking these kids, and they're going to middle America, and then who knows what after that. I wish the community and the public would just look under the surface a little bit at some of these NGOs or 501c3s. Their records are all online. You could pull their financials and you could look at them. And it's just not adding up. Who's facilitating this stuff? And I'm not going to speculate or tell my opinion in front of the world because you can look and see. It just does not make sense where the money's coming from and then where it's going. I wish people would look at it.
And do you have any other thoughts for our audience?
I do. We live in a huge military community in San Diego. Huge. Chances are you know someone who served or is serving. They're doing that for a reason. Maybe it's they get free college. Maybe they get their debt paid off. Or maybe they love this country. There's a lot of people that still love this country. This is the greatest country in the world. We need to keep it that way. I wish people would see what the people before us did to make this country and look forward and see we just need to keep those values and keep moving forward and help people that need help, but use the laws that we currently have on the books to stop what's going on.
Corey Gotturo, San Diego resident and business owner, it was great to have you on California Insider.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
We have an exciting news for you. At California Insider, we created a new product. It's called California Insider Opinion. This is where our insiders and experts across the state are actually telling you what's going on behind the headlines. When there's a breaking news, a big issue, important issue happening in California, they're gonna come on the screen and tell you what's happening behind the scenes. And these are like 7 to 10 minutes of opinion formats, where the guests are talking to the camera directly, telling you what's happening.
You're paying a tax increase of tens of thousands of dollars every year as a condition of keeping what you already own.
Make sure to look at the description below because you want to sign up on our newsletter because a lot of these opinions might be very sensitive that some people in the social media platform may not like. So we're putting them in the newsletter on our website so you can have them. These opinions will actually help you understand the political and policy landscape of California. We highly recommend you follow it.